This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
The Delphi murder case, it has been a labyrinth of twists, turns, and it's kind of insanity. It's kind of what I feel like this case has been from day one. And wait, what? What do we have now? Well, now we have allegations that key evidence was intentionally withheld from the defense. And we're not talking about a crime scene. We're talking about a legal battlefield, letters that suggest alternative suspects, missing police interviews, the potential leads apparently recorded over. And prosecutors, well, let's just say they're not offering up many explanations. Joining us, a retired FBI Special Agent Jennifer Coffendaffer, someone who knows exactly how cases should be investigated and how bad things can get when critical evidence goes missing. Jennifer, let's start with the big question here. Evidence suppression, that is the big topic on this one, amongst others at this moment in time. The letters that came in from Ricky Davis in the court or in the prison system, he says he sent seven. It turns out it looks like they got three of them, I believe. The prosecution allegedly has that. But the DA made his own decision. It's nothing. I don't need to turn this over. What's your reaction to that little ditty?
Yeah, you know, there's absolutely no excuse for that. The prosecutor isn't judge and jury. The prosecutor is merely to litigate the facts presented to them by his investigators. And for him to make a judge / jury decision that certain evidence isn't important is a violation of his oath, and I think it's a very extreme violation in this case.
Where do you think this goes? I mean, it's been a brick wall with Gulch. She has not made much of a ruling, but McClelland has come back with his excuse of, yeah, and I was surprised by it. I was surprised he didn't play stupid, like, oh, guys, I'm going to fall on my sword here. I'm sorry. Yeah, it's over there. We didn't really put much merit to it, so I didn't. It's an error. It's an error. I screwed up. I didn't send it to you. No, he's saying flat out, I purposely did not give this to you.
I think he's so comfortable, Tony. I mean, Goal has ruled in their favor, the prosecution's favor, on every single point.
Mm-hmm.
Even, you know, excusing both of them as the attorneys of record until she was overruled by Supreme Court of Indiana. Unless this gets out of Judge Gould's jurisdiction, there is no chance this is going anywhere. So it's got to be seen by an appellate court, in my opinion, a court above her, you know, the Supreme Court again, for anything, I think, to be decided, anything other than in favor of the prosecution. Unfortunately, that's where we're at here.
There's so many things in this case that were not turned over, or they were recorded over. There's always an excuse. If something like really critical is not there or seems to be off, they always got an excuse. And it's usually a really weak excuse, but you got Gull backing you up on this. So it's just another thing added to this whole pile of things a jury never saw, or the defense never even had a chance to take a look at and examine. It's maddening how this thing is playing out. The Ricci Davis letters themselves, obviously a big deal is being made out of them. How important do you think they actually are to this case, and how legitimate do you think they are based on everything that we know so far?
You know, I've always questioned any jailhouse fella that comes forward mm-hmm. and all of a sudden has all these epiphanies. But this is the reason he sticks out to me as definitely needing to be considered. And that is, one, he brings up a fact regarding box cutters that have never came out until the trial, when the ME pontificates that could be, it could have been done with box cutter, right? Mm-hmm. So that's a big one to me, because he basically is giving a clue unknown to the public or anyone that only the killer would know. Yeah. And of course, he's talking about Ron Logan. The other issue, I think, is there's so much corroborative information for anybody who wants to check it out. It's on the affidavit. I've posted it many times, but it's out there on the Carroll County website. You can see the FBI's affidavit indicating that Ron Logan was responsible, or there was probable cause that Ron Logan committed these crimes. Mm-hmm. So it's a very good read because it puts together a lot of information, a lot of motive, a lot of factors that lean toward that. Now, what's really interesting, I think, Tony, is the fact that when you add that all together, plus the fact he doesn't want consideration for his sentence. Mm-hmm. He's not trying to get out. He's not trying to get a sentence reduction. He doesn't want anything. He's actually doing it for the truth of the matter. And believe it or not, some of these guys do that.
Yeah,
they have an awakening and they just want to do something right, especially when they, you know, they're in jail for a long prison for a long time. So those three factors make his statements much more plausible.
Yeah, it's not exactly something because people go, well, he wants the attention. Snitches don't fare well in prison. And if you're snitching on this case over here, what else are you going to snitch on? It doesn't work out well. He's putting himself in danger by even putting this out there. That's another factor on this where I go, I don't know, this might have some actual weight to it. Again, it's his word against others. Now, obviously, you know, Logan's dead, but we do have Keegan Klein that is still alive. Is he someone that obviously we would need a new investigation, but is he someone, if you were an investigator on this and it's re-going, the FBI's looking at it again, is he someone that you would ask some new questions to or investigate further? Or do you think he's already been cleared on this, despite the insane coincidence that he's communicating with the girls, talking about meeting one of them the day that they're murdered? It just doesn't seem like the odds are in the favor of that just being a coincidence.
You know, I've never thought that Keegan Klein himself was involved in the murder per se.
Yeah.
But I do think his pseudo, you know, persona, Anthony Schatz, who was communicating and trying to get a meetup together. I just think that this was other people knew about those communications is likely.
Yeah.
Because these folks, you know, trade and share porn. They work together often to get, you know, information. They this is what they do.
Yeah.
They sit behind that keyboard all day long, and this is what makes them tick. So from that regard, I just wonder who else might have known that they would have been out there. It's just so coincidental. So I would like to know that answer. And that's what I would look into.
There's just so many things that are unknown because they weren't looked at. And that's the hugest problem with this case is the lack of the thorough investigation. Where elements of it, you know, early on did look thorough. It just took years for them to finally land on Richard Allen because they didn't have anybody, it seems. Even though they did, even though they had some folks served up to them on a platter, you know, Ron Logan and such. At this point, obviously, they've convicted somebody. Is there any interest? Is there any reason the FBI would go back and revisit this case? Can they even do something like this if they believe that, look, the locals really got this wrong?
If they don't, there's no venue for them other than a police corruption nexus. If they believe there was true corruption rather than, as we talked about before, incompetence, right? Mm-hmm. Incompetence and corruption mirror each other. And so, you know, my point is, I think this was absolute incompetence that then... I think the prosecution staff covered.
Yeah.
And what I find just mind-boggling to me, you're not allowed to bring in third-party culprit theories if there's nothing to support them. In other words, like in the Karen Reed case where you just have no evidence, but you're saying you're accusing three people and a dog of a murder with absolutely nothing to support that, right? Mm-hmm. But in this case, you have a litany of facts that support Ron Logan being culpable.
Yeah.
And then you also have some facts that support Keegan Klein possibly knowing the girls were out there. Listen, law enforcement was so convinced Keegan Klein was somehow involved, they snatched him out of jail, which is not a hard, which is, I'm sorry, is a very hard thing to do, and had him walk the river looking for a weapon, you know. So they were certainly convinced at one point. And my point isn't that Ron Logan did this or that Keegan Klein somehow was involved. My point is this is a matter for the jury. And the jury was never allowed to look at any of this. And that is the fallacy. That's what's wrong.
Why did it take so long to arrest Keegan Klein? And it wasn't even on the charges of catfishing for children, which he was doing at that point in time. It was later on when they found all the child porn on his stuff. They knew he was into this stuff for a while. Again, why? Why did it take so long, especially when you're really looking closely at him for a potential murder? Again, never charged in that. But again, there was seemed to be other chargeable offenses with this guy, notably trying to communicate with a minor to go meet.
Yeah, solicitation potentially, and the whole catfishing scheme had.
Waiting for Chris Hansen to be there, you know?
Part of it is these cases do take a long time. I could tell you I was involved in a case, it was codenamed Blue Darcy, and that case, there were so many of us that had to work on it, and you just literally, it's so gross, Tony.
Yeah.
You have to sit there and watch child porn movies and photos for hours.
Oh, God.
And not just me, our squad trying to assist in these cases. And these cases are so disgusting. And just think of the amount of time, Tony, to sit there and watch and document. This is what happened at, you know, 1 second. This is at 1.2 seconds. Yeah. This is, you know, you're literally documenting it, and you have so much. These individuals who are purveyors in child pornography, they have libraries of this crap. So not only are you doing that to try to put your case together, then you're looking at the solicitation piece and these pseudonames and you know, false, fictitious people that he had, you know, trying to communicate, not just shots. I believe there were others and other people involved, as I said. It's so complicated. Oftentimes people think, oh yeah, there you go, you got an image, just charge him with that. Well, that isn't how it works. You're supposed to find all the evidence that implicates an individual. I think they charged him with over 20 counts, might have even been over 30, then they took a couple away. It's labor intensive and it's difficult work, and most people don't want to work on it. I always told my boss, listen, I will go through a sewer hole looking for a fugitive before I'll do this.
Yeah.
And then they said, sorry, Jen, you're doing this. And I said,
Is it lack of resources sometimes and able to really clamp down on some of these people? Again, he seemed like, from a layman's standpoint out here, seemed like easy fishing because he was right there. And we knew what he was up to. Why does it take so long to get somebody like that? Is it because, well, you know, in some cases it's let him keep doing this and we got our eye on him now. He'll lead us to other folks and we can do a bigger, sting on a group versus just this guy. Is that part of the thinking here?
I mean, that can be part of the thinking, but, you know, that's you got to be careful with doing anything like that because you're potentially putting minors in jeopardy that are going to be hurt. So the minute you really know something like that's going on, you really have to bring the hammer and move forward in that way, in a more overt way. But I'll tell you what, Tony, it does take time. And you look at, they have all sorts of firewalls and other mechanisms that they use to not be able to penetrate their files. So even when you have somebody, you're sending it off to Secret Service, has an amazing ability. And of course, FBI CART, they also are amazing at getting everything. And then finally, you have the raw data to look at. Mm-hmm. And then you have to find the people who, by the way, are doing crimes all day long, right? Locals, to have to sit down and look at this. Yeah. So I would argue that it's just so manpower intensive. and it takes a while.
What I would love to see is the results of the FBI's findings on the search of Ron Logan's house. You know, that was given to Delphi authorities. I don't believe anyone has ever seen this thing. Why? I mean, is that something we're ever going to see? Can that be brought out? Can that be Freedom of Information Acted pulled? Or would this take, you know, another case, maybe, I don't know, a civil case or something to get this information into discovery so it can be viewed and looked at? Because I'd imagine that's a treasure trove of information that points to Ron Logan, you know, allegedly, that's my take on it, far more than what we already even know.
Well, this is the thing. First of all, it was or should have been in discovery, definitely.
Why wasn't it?
But I, no, it would have been.
Okay.
They have to show that. Yeah. Although.
But we can have third party. So was it?
Well, when I say discovery, it has to be given over.
Yeah.
You know, even though the judge ruled none of it's going to be looked at by a jury, it's not coming into my trial, it still has to exchange hands over to the defense if it was part of the case. I say that, but then look at what we're looking at with the letters.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly. So like, where was it?
Yeah, was it really? But this is my understanding on this, just to let you know.
Yeah.
It was almost a month before the FBI got involved in this case. Mm-hmm. It was in March. So they weren't able to do a search warrant. I believe it was around 3 weeks or so after the horrific crime took place. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, by then, so much was gone. The one thing that was recovered that I thought was very interesting was a lot of cleaning products, this citrus orange, some sort of cleaning product that was found. But so much, unfortunately, wasn't found. And I believe the gun, I don't think they ever recovered a 40 caliber.
Yeah. I just wonder what else was found. I mean, they initially went in there looking to see if there was any sort of, you know, fibers or hair or anything like that. And we don't know what they found. It was never release. I wonder what else they would have come up with, or did they come up with? And we just don't know the answer to that. And if defense never got it, obviously that was never to be brought up. I don't know. That to me seems to be still be a big missing piece to this puzzle.
Yeah, Tony, there was a search warrant return. It's vaguely in my brain. As I said, I remember this orange cleaning product,
yeah.
And I remember them being remiss about the, or I shouldn't say remiss, something being amiss with the 40 caliber mm-hmm. Gun, perhaps being found but not being seized. I can't remember exactly what happened, but I agree with you. That's something that certainly I need to look at it, Tony. If I find it, I'm going to send it to you. But in the back part of my brain, I think I've seen something about that return, and it wasn't what I expected, but kind of what I expected because it'd been so long.
Yeah. So many questions on this. Obviously, we're not going to drop it because it just keeps getting weirder. So we'll keep watching. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our coverage on the Delphi murders.
The latest true crime stories, expert breakdowns, and shocking twists all in one place. Press subscribe now to the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Tony, I'm